Members, we're going to get started. We're not at quorum yet, but we should be shortly. Good morning, everyone. I just had an official request from Representative Brainerd for our committee to requisition several space heaters for us. And I think, Representative Brainerd, I don't think we need to put that to the vote. I think we'll just go ahead and do that. I was welcoming our visitor from out of state and told them that this was our way of making out-of-state visitors feel, you know, have an ultimate Minnesota experience here in our nice, cool room.
Mr. Chair, a couple of blankets would be nice.
Blankets would be good, Representative Dornis. Yes, indeed. We can even all huddle up closer together, one another. Yeah, there we go. Members, we will be meeting the next two meetings in 200, in room 200. I suspect it'll be a little bit warmer, but the primary reason we want to do that is that we want to be able to have this full discussion this week with the ability to share it with the broader public. It's difficult to do that in this room because we don't have the video capacity in this room, although we do have audio capacity. So just note the next two meetings will be upstairs in room 200. Members, today we'll be hearing primarily from two individuals, and my hope is that, in fact, everything I've always promised where you guys get to ask questions and engage and I never come through, that today we'll be able to do that. A number of you shared concerns and awareness around the emerging unintended consequence of our grad test, our high school exit exam, high stakes exit exam. I know a number of you have heard from your own districts and from parents about this issue, and we will be diving into that issue in detail as there will at least be one bill and perhaps a couple of bills, several bills coming forward to attempt to address the short-term consequences of the grad test. But before we do that, what I want to do is be able to provide us a context within which we can have make those decisions, so sort of a broader context, what's it all about kind of question. And so today's meeting, tomorrow and Thursday, will be primarily looking at, you know, those bigger issues related to the purpose of high school certification relative to reality, and so really looking at sort of the larger, longer-term decisions that we should be making as policymakers in this regard. So I've got a couple of notes here. I'm going to try to put them together very quickly for you. I do want to share with you that, at least as your chairperson, that it would be my hope that whatever decisions we make relative to short-term and long-term adjustments in policy in this regard, that we be guided by four considerations. One is that we be informed by research, and that our decisions and the frames that we develop be constantly informed and supported by data, that there's data-driven decision-making that we engage in. Two, that we be fully informed of possible unintended consequences, and that we avoid our work, or that we approach our work in terms of avoiding the most negative of those, so sort of the do no harm kind of psychology. The third is that we pay very close and serious attention, and we'll be talking a little bit today, a lot today about this, that the value, the goal of aligning our K-12 outcomes with post-secondary and career readiness. So connecting our K-12 outcomes with reality, quite frankly. And then finally, that whatever we do, how we do it, that we be deliberate in doing that, that we move policy at a realistic and responsible pace, and you know, we'll talk among ourselves in terms of what is realistic and what is responsible. So today, we're going to hear from two individuals, Mike Cohen, who's president of Achieve, Inc., and then later followed by Kent Pickell, who's with the College Readiness Consortium at the University of Minnesota. And some of the things that, well, let me back up. And then tomorrow, we're going to have a discussion about Minnesota's high school exit exam. We're going to hear from an assessment expert, Rick Stakuza from South Washington Schools, who will give us sort of a bit of a background in terms of the history of how we moved from the BSTs to today's present exam requirement. What is the purpose of the grad? What does it measure? Why was the grad combined with the MCA2s? I think it's important for us to understand kind of the bigger accountability framework and what the relationship, and should there be a relationship, in terms of high school exams relative to that bigger accountability framework that is largely dictated by our requirement to meet federal standards, federal expectations, rather. On Thursday, we then will have a discussion on Minnesota's long-term options for high school exit exams, and so we'll be looking at and hearing from a broad group of stakeholders about different possibilities and options for us to consider, including the Department of Education, MNSCU, University of Minnesota College of Education, and the Minnesota Assessment Group. So today, we'll start with Mr. Cohen, and some of the questions right off the bat here that I'll hope that he'll be able to get to is, are things like, how do we arrive at a definition of college and career readiness? How do we best measure college and career readiness? How do we translate our definition of readiness into educational standards, assessments, and requirements for education? And so so with that, I'm told that we have a quorum. I'm going to officially call us to order. And perhaps Representative Cass, if you could be so kind just to get this out of the way to move the minutes of our January 21st meeting, I would be obliged.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So moved.
Representative Cass moves adoption of the January 21st minutes. Those are in your packet, members. Any questions? If not, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. Mr. Cohen, welcome to the committee. I think what we'll do is for sure carve out 40 minutes for you. So about 25 after, we'll then make the transition over to Mr. Pacal. But I will certainly ask you to stay up there because I suspect that we'll have a lot of good back and forth between the both of you and the committee. And of course, if you want to move faster than that, you have no objections from the chair. Welcome to the committee. If you can state your name for the record and provide us with your testimony, I'd appreciate it.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Michael Cohn. I'm the president of Achieve, and I'm very, very pleased to be here with you this morning. I'd like to thank you for the warm welcome that you arranged when I arrived last night, but given your comments at the opening of the meeting, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that that's exactly the way I would characterize it, at least not until the space heaters and blankets arrive. But I am pleased to be here. I'm going to focus my comments in a moment on some of the longer-term issues and kind of the national picture around college and career readiness and assessments that you'll be discussing over the course of the week. Before I jump into that, I just want to make a couple of points about Minnesota as I thought about this hearing and this testimony coming in here.
And Mr. Cohen, I apologize. I neglected to do this. I want to encourage members to certainly, and we talked about this, to certainly raise questions throughout Mr. Cohen's presentation. So don't feel like you need to wait for him to get the whole testimony out, and I'll try to look out and acknowledge you for questions. So please proceed.
Thank you. A couple things about Minnesota that you should know from an outsider's perspective. Sometimes people in the state don't necessarily see things the way an outsider does. One is Minnesota is actually a national leader on issues of college and career readiness. Can people hear me? Does this help? Should I speak louder? Okay. So you are a national leader on issues of college and career readiness in a number of respects. As you'll see as I go through my presentation, there's a growing number of states that are addressing this issue, and you are further along in the policy development process in this area than most other states. In fact, you've been selected by our organization and a number of other partners in the Gates Foundation with whom we work to be part of a college and career-ready policy institute, and these to develop further policies in the states that we selected for this are the leading-edge states in the country. So just know you're out ahead of this movement. Secondly, I was reflecting on the recent TIMS results as I was preparing for this. And first of all, as you clearly know, the results of that, particularly the growth in fourth grade math, were just phenomenal. What hit me about that is that you can't write the growth off to whatever the unique demographics of Minnesota might be compared to others. That growth is a result of deliberate strategies, clear, focused, rigorous standards, lots of support for teachers through professional development, curriculum and instructional tools and the like. I mean, those took deliberate efforts to produce the growth that you've gotten. And it's worth keeping in mind as you have a discussion about setting higher expectations for students as they complete high school, that unique among the states in the country, you've actually got a track record of producing world-class results through a deliberate strategy. Not many states can say that, and that is just an enormously important foundation on which you can build. Now, you still have a long way to go in at least two respects. One is you've got high achievement, and certainly compared to the world and to the rest of the states, but you still got pretty significant achievement gaps. The gaps between Asian and white students on the one hand and Native American, African American, and Latino students on the other, from performance in fourth grade right through post-secondary enrollment and degree completion, are big, and they don't appear to be shrinking very dramatically. So high overall achievement, but some real issues to pay attention to in terms of how you support students in the state. One other thing I want to say by way of a preliminary comment, as you debate high school assessment issues here in Minnesota, this is the right time to be doing that from a national perspective. Sometime within the next several years, nobody knows exactly when, Congress will take up the reauthorization of No Child Left Behind in the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. Right now, the federal government leaves you a pretty clear playing field and lots of running room around high school assessment issues. The federal requirements at the secondary level are pretty minimal, particularly in comparison to the requirements in 3 to 8. As you'll see from the slideshow I'm going to do, states are really leading the effort on high school expectations and requirements issues now. And I think the more states that provide that leadership, the more the federal government, when it takes this up, will be responding to state leadership rather than preempting state leadership. So this is a good time to be moving forward on this, because you've got the room to figure out what works best for Minnesota, and you can, I think, influence what happens in Washington. And I've got a long history of working with states and always think that the states ought to be the senior partner on education issues. I encourage you to continue to move in this direction, take up and resolve this issue in a timely manner. So that's the preliminaries. Now let me get to the presentation. I'll try to go through it pretty quickly, particularly once I figure out the right button to push. For those of you who are not familiar with Achieve, just a little bit of background on us. We're an independent, nonprofit, and bipartisan organization founded by governors and business leaders in 1996. We basically are the organization that governors and business leaders set up to help states with standards-based reform, to help them develop standards, to make sure that they are rigorous and clear and useful, and to sustain support for standards-based reform. So this is a set of issues, standards, assessment, et cetera, that we've been working with for more than a decade with states, and we bring that background to this testimony. Research that Achieve did around 2002, 2003, and 2004 just highlighted the fact that we have far too many young people who are graduating from high school not prepared for what comes next. I don't know the figures for Minnesota, but nationally 30% of first-year students have to take some kind of remedial course those students who do that in post-secondary education have a significantly lower chance of graduating. They're not earning college credit, but they are paying college tuition for those courses. It's not really a good deal if you think about it from a parent's point of view, among other things, let alone the state's point of view. In a survey of recent high school graduates that achieved it in 2004, 40 to 45% of them were asked, now that you're out in the real world, by the way, these are kids who were 3 years out of high school, so the real world was either the college classroom or their first job, basically. And what they said was, now that I'm out in the real world, I really do have some significant gaps in my academic skills. I'm not really prepared to do all the work that's expected of me. That's 40 to 45% of them. We also surveyed college faculty and employers, and basically they couldn't agree more that a large percentage of the high school graduates lack the skills they needed to succeed, either in the college classroom or in the workplace. ACT, doing work independently of ACHIEVE, estimates that only about half the college-bound students are ready to read, to do college-level reading. That's for when they take the ACT test, typically in the 11th grade. So lots of indicators that we have students coming through and completing high school but not prepared for what they face after high school. We began to look into this more deeply through something we call the American Diploma Project. I won't go through all the details, but the bottom line here is we work with college faculty and employers in five states to try to get a handle on the question of what are the essential skills that a young person needs to have coming out of high school, at least in math and English, so that they are prepared to enter and succeed at college-level work and have access to 21st century jobs that pay well and have some advancement potential, most of which require some post-secondary training, whether it's an apprenticeship or a two-year or a four-year program. Most good jobs are not accessible to someone with just a high school diploma. The major finding we had, we have a set of benchmark expectations, set of end of high school standards, if you will, that define in some detail the most essential knowledge and skills that young people need, again, in math and English and communications and literacy, in order to be able to do college-level work or succeed in the workplace. The major finding that we had was this tremendous convergence between the knowledge and skills necessary for success in post-secondary education and for success in the workplace. There is a common core of knowledge and skills all high school graduates need if they're going to be prepared for whatever they're going to do after high school. And again, ACT, doing research independently, came to the same conclusion, this sort of convergence of college-ready and work-ready skills was quite striking and quite important, because if it turns out that everyone coming through high school needs a common set of skills, you need to build the mission of the high school around those college and career-ready skills. It's not that there aren't ways in which students will differ, but there's a common core that all students need. After we did that research, we started to look at what it took to earn a high school diploma in this country, and those results were quite eye-opening. But summarized here, we generally, particularly when we started this research in 2004, did not expect students to actually be prepared for post-secondary education or work when they earned a high school diploma. The standards that most states had set did not reflect an analysis of what students need to know after they complete high school. It simply reflected a consensus among experts in a discipline about what would be desirable to learn or what they thought and could get their colleagues to agree would be worth learning. It was sort of a log-rolling process rather than a data-driven process to identify core knowledge and skills. The math that students need to learn, we did our research, is typically taught in math that goes through an Algebra 2 course in a typical high school. In 2004-2005, only two states required students to take Algebra 2 in order to earn a high school diploma. In about half the states, you could take 2 years of math, not much more than Algebra 1, in order to earn a diploma. Big gap between what students needed to know to succeed and what they needed to do in order to graduate. I know you'll be debating this. We looked at, in some detail, at state high school graduation tests. We did not look at Minnesota, but we looked in detail at about seven or eight other states and item-by-item review to see what those tests measured. They were generally measuring 8th and 9th grade level skills. That's what students needed to demonstrate in order to pass. They were setting a floor below which you couldn't go and still earn a high school diploma, but they were not coming close to measuring the higher-end skills.
Mr. Cohen, I'm going to stop you here. We do have a question, Representative Norton, and I know that Mr. Patel is listening attentively, so one of the questions I have, perhaps you can later on address this issue of to what degree have any of our standards that have currently been developed been informed by this common core knowledge of college readiness. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, wanted that same bit of information addressed. And also, you talked about the two states that require Algebra 2, and I wondered if any research had been done if the two states that have that requirement are showing less remediation need, better results upon, you know.
The answer to that is we don't know yet. First of all, the two states that did that, had that requirement in 2004-2005, were just phasing it in. There are now 21 states that have that requirement, but they're all being phased in. As you've done here, you adopt it at one point, but it affects the graduating class some years down the road, so it's too early to tell. It is the case, though, that, not surprisingly, students who take a more rigorous curriculum, including advanced math courses, are more likely to do well in college than students who don't. It's not the same as the impact of a requirement, but we know that taking a rigorous curriculum really makes a big difference. It's probably the single biggest factor. Finally, just to complete the pictures, we try to figure out how do the expectations match up with the real world demands. If you think about the way in which high schools are held accountable, they're generally asked how many kids pass the graduation test. They're not asked how many kids are really prepared for what they're going to do after college. So, again, big gap between what we expect from our students in our schools by way of earning a high school diploma and what students need to know in order to succeed afterwards. We thought this was a bit of a problem when we put all this data together and developed a policy agenda that we thought states ought to address in order to close this expectation gap. Briefly, what these bullets say is that in order to encourage states to align the expectations for earning a high school diploma with the real-world demands students will face afterwards. And the key tools for defining expectations in most states are the standards and making sure they reflect real-world demands. And by the way, we have worked, and my student Kent will give the same answer to this, we work with a team from Minnesota that's been trying to do precisely that, looking at the evidence on the real-world demand students will face. Ken, I'm going to back me up on that. One is align the standards. Secondly, require students to take a curriculum that actually delivers those standards so that they're not aspirational, and you hope that someone will take courses that will deliver those standards, but that already built into the requirement. Thirdly, and I'll spend a bit more time on this as we get into this presentation, administer at least one of the tests that students take in high school should tell them while they're still in high school whether they're meeting those college and career-ready standards, rather than have them wait until after they graduate, get to college, and then discover that maybe they weren't well prepared. So that is a big shift. And then fourth, and I'll talk about this a bit later in more detail, hold schools accountable for graduating students who are actually well prepared, who have meet college and career-ready standards. So this is we think of this as a policy agenda that is simple to write and talk about and very difficult to do. And we actually like the fact that we're in the writing and talking about business, that you all are in the sort of policy development and implementation stage, but we are working very closely with a large number of states that are wrestling with these issues. In fact, at the 2005 National Education Summit, which is all about high schools that NGA and ACHIEVE co-sponsored, Governors Association, we formed a network of 13 states where the governor, the K-12 and higher ed leaders, and the business leaders said, that policy agenda I just showed is ours. We want to work on that. So we created the American Diploma Project Network to help states work together on addressing these issues, each in their own state. Today, there are 34 states that have joined this network, all on a voluntary basis, all making the same commitment to addressing the same policy agenda. These states collectively educate just under 85% of the public school students in the country. So this is, I think, now a national issue. It may not be a federal issue, but it's a national issue to improve readiness and to make college and career readiness the mission of our K-12 system. And again, Minnesota is one of the leading states in this effort.
So ergo, Mr. Cohen, kind of a demonstration of leadership that's emerging from the state. We do have a question from Representative Beinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it Mr. Cohen or Dr. Cohen?
Mr.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Michael would be Michael.
Well,
be
all right. I just always like to give appropriate honor to people's academic achievements. So, Mr. Cohen.
If you call me Mr., you will be providing appropriate honor.
Well done.
All right. Well, with that in mind, you may or may not be aware that we worked in Minnesota last session to consider addressing post-secondary readiness by reporting on rigorous course completion. As currently, our current report card system simply reports availability of rigorous course, and we wanted to look at a measure that. And so I'm very interested in your approach to assessing college readiness, and I'm sure you'll have more to say about that. I have a great deal of concern about adding another testing mechanism and how it could be integrated into current testing, mm-hmm. and whether and how reporting on rigorous course completion from a research base compares to the type of assessment you're talking about. And that may be a big question, and you may be getting to it, but I just wanted to give you that context yes. for discussions we've had here.
Very good questions. The short answer is both course taking and test results are important, independent of each other and also reinforcing each other, and I will come to that in more detail as I go on. What this slide does, we do a survey of 50 states each year and ask them, have you addressed any of those policy issues that that I laid out earlier? And what this slide shows, I won't walk you through each of the numbers, but it shows that in some areas we are seeing tremendous progress. So, for example, if you look at the second bar from the top on graduation requirements, didn't go back to 2005 in this slide, but there were two states that had a required students to take, if you will, a rigorous college and career prep curriculum, a core set of courses that were aligned with the demand students will face. There were two in 2005. There are now 21 that have adopted such a requirement, and another 10 that are working on it. That's a pretty rapid progress in a pretty short period of time. States have also made a lot of progress on aligning their high school and academic standards with the demands of post-secondary education and work. Less traction, less progress right now on dealing with assessments. As you clearly know, it's a tougher set of issues to deal with. States are moving as rapidly as they can on building the data systems that will enable them to follow students through K-12 into higher ed, which is really the foundation of an information and accountability system. More states are working on it than have completed it so far. And few states have really wrestled with the accountability issues yet. They are far more complicated than what we do at the elementary and middle school level. And again, I'll get into that in a bit. But the basic point here is states are moving on this agenda. In some areas, they're moving quite rapidly. In other areas, more slowly. Give you another picture of the same data. There are now 22 states that have aligned high school standards with the demands of college and work. Minnesota is one of those. We've worked very closely with your team on that. 20 states and D.C., so that's 21 jurisdictions, now require students to take a core set of courses to earn a diploma. Now, in some states, they require everybody to take that core set of courses. You know, no exceptions, no excuses. In other states, that is what's known as the default option. That's the curriculum students are placed into when they walk into high school, but they can opt out of that. Typically, if a parent or guardian comes to school, sits down with someone who explains the opportunities they will miss if they take a less rigorous curriculum. In Indiana, for example, when they did this, one of the opportunities students missed was access to a full set of student financial aid, right? You can take a less rigorous course, you can probably still get into colleges in Indiana, but the state's not going to provide you as much financial aid as someone who invested in themselves in high school. That's probably the most traumatic version of that. But again, students can opt into a less rigorous curriculum in a number of states, but they have to acknowledge the opportunities they'll miss and the price they'll pay, if you will. 9 states now have some kind of college and career ready measure built into their state assessment system. Again, I'll get into this in more detail about how they do that. And only a little bit of progress in terms of states having any kind of accountability indicators about college and career readiness. Now, I want to talk about 2 other developments that have come out of this work. With regard to standards, as Kent, I'm sure, will tell you, Minnesota developed, adopted, revised, did all the work on its own standards. Right? These are Minnesota standards. It turns out that when states try to answer the question, what are the real-world demands students will face when they leave our high school? That answer doesn't vary very much from state to state. You know, ready for work in Minnesota and ready for work in Maine are not dramatically different. Ready for college is not dramatically different. As a result, we're seeing something quite phenomenal across states with regard to standards. There is a growing number of states that have a common core of expectations, common standards that they expect of their students, not because someone wrote it for them and said, here, do this, but because they answered the same questions looking at the same kind of data and ended up in the same place. For any of you who've ever watched the debates about national standards, this is a bottom-up way to get to a place that we probably ought to be at without political battles that other efforts have entailed in the past. There's also a group of 15 states, of which Minnesota is a part, that is developing a common end-of-course exam in Algebra 2. You all are piloting that. You'll have to decide what to do with that. But, again, a group of state leaders said, you know, if we're going to encourage kids to take Algebra 2, we really ought to find out what they're learning. We ought to have some kind of consistent measure across our state for that. An end-of-course exam seems like a pretty good way to do that, but we don't each need our own Algebra 2 exam. In fact, we can't for the life of us imagine why we would want our own unique Algebra 2 course. It ought to be pretty consistent across states. So we're seeing some state leadership around areas, you know, partnership across states that we've typically not seen in education before as a result of this effort. So these are the states, again, Minnesota is one, that have a common core set of standards. That is, there's a common, Minnesota still has its own standards compared to Oklahoma and Arkansas, but in each of those state standards is a pretty big chunk of standards that have the, you know, that are comparable, that are the same across the states. That's a pretty significant development. Minnesota, you've got it in math. You hadn't finished the English language arts work at the time that we did this analysis. The Algebra 2 exam is worth spending a minute or two on because it speaks to some of the, at least one of the options on assessment. First of all, again, states came together to develop this exam, and they wanted to make it a college-ready measure. They wanted it to measure whether kids had college-ready skills. In part, that means that when we tell a student that they scored proficient on the test, that they actually, it ought to mean that they're prepared to succeed in what they're going to do after high school. It is, proficient is not an arbitrary mark on a testing scale, it reflects the knowledge and skills and a high likelihood of success after high school, particularly for post-secondary education. If you have a test like that, it does 2 things. It enables students who are not meeting those standards to find out while they're still in high school so they can do something about it, right? Typically in their junior or senior year, depending on when they take Algebra 2, they can fill in those skill gaps. For those who do well on the test, they can be told, well, we're still in high school, you'll be taking credit-bearing courses when you go to a state institution. You won't have to take remedial courses. That's kind of nice news to have. It tells you you really are college material. So that was one thing that the states wanted out of this test, and we're working to build that. They also wanted to make sure that Algebra 2 really was Algebra 2 wherever the course was given in the state. A number of the leaders and a number of the original states that put this together kind of had a hunch that if all they did was say kids should take Algebra 2, Algebra 2 might look suspiciously like Algebra 1 in a significant number of high schools in the state. So they wanted something that would promote a measure of consistency. They also wanted to be able to compare their performance across states to get an accurate measure of where they stood. And it turns out by working together, they reduced the cost of the test as well. This test was given for the first time to students in a dozen of the 15 states last spring to 90,000 students. So its test has been given. The results came back. I mean, it's sort of a going operation now. And states, again, are piloting it to see how it works, how to use it, and how to take advantage of it. So one byproduct of this college and career readiness work has been this common work across states. All right, so let me zero in on the testing issues a bit. Before I get into this, just think about the typical high school student for a second, either here in Minnesota or elsewhere in the country. If you're a high school student, you take a lot of tests. You're probably over-tested and under-informed. First of all, you take state tests for either graduation purposes or school accountability purposes. In all likelihood, there's a set of local district standardized tests as well, perhaps in other grade levels or other subjects. You often take final exams that may be school or teacher made if they're not district made. So it's a lot of testing going on, but just think about this. The tests that you take that the state or district requires you to take are presumably aligned to the curriculum you're taking, depending on the nature of the test, more or less well aligned. But there's not a person in higher education who cares at all about those tests. The higher ed system doesn't care about the results. They don't look at them. They don't know what the test measures, or if they do, they don't think it's rigorous enough to be meaningful for them. So if you're a college grad student, then you go off and take the ACT or the SAT, which, of course, the post-secondary institutions pay a lot of attention to, particularly selective institutions, particularly when you're applying to be admitted. Those tests, however, are not at all or not well aligned with the curriculum in your school. So, and the results come back, you know, weeks or months later. There's no way to feed that back into improving curriculum and instruction in the school. They are just two separate testing systems, and most kids are subjected to both of them. With all due respect, no rational person would design that system. It grew out of a historic separation between K-12 and higher ed. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges here is to figure out how to create a more streamlined system that produces information that's useful for both. So as we've been working with states on this, we see three different ways to come at this, each with a set of pros and cons. There's no magic bullet here. No testing approach will do everything. You've got some decisions and trade-offs to make.
I'm going to interrupt you quickly, Representative Norton. I think you triggered a question there with that distinction between and the evolution between high school curriculum-based testing and college expectations for entrance requirements. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it did. It's an intriguing discussion, and I look forward to having some more of it. And I guess I would take it even a step further in that if we have the end-of-course assessments, which my district's always had, but I assume now that they're doing it in a more planful way with the state involved. So we have a Algebra 2 end-of-course assessment, and I would love to know, I don't expect you to know the answer because it's Minnesota-specific, but how that correlates with either basic skills test results, grad results, and ACT results for the students in our state. And again, it's because of the historic nature of these tests and the lack of alignment that we're in this situation. But I guess I would be interested as we're struggling in the next 2 days with a discussion about grad, and I'm raising this more for the committee and the chair rather than expecting you to answer it, but how all these things are correlated or not and how we're going to address that.
So I can't answer specifically with Minnesota, and if I were more technologically adept, I would jump to two slides at the very end of my presentation, but we'll do that later because we actually have an analysis of the math that's measured on the Algebra 2 test we've been developing versus the math that we found on most state high school graduation tests that we studied. Again, not Minnesota, so you could be completely different, but you'll be struck by the comparison when I get there in a moment. So you've got several different approaches. One is an end-of-grade test. You give an 11th grade test. Everyone takes it at the end of 11th grade. Doesn't matter what courses they're taking, I presume. They just take the test at the end of 11th grade, and it measures some cumulative knowledge and skills that they might have learned sometime in their high school career leading up to the end of 11th grade. Now, California has a test like this. It's their STAR test. It's their state accountability test. It's not the test that kids have to pass in order to graduate. They sat down with the California State University system and looked very carefully at the test. The CSU system had the advantage of having defined system-wide college-ready standards and having a system-wide placement exam, so they knew what it meant, right, when they talked about readiness. And they looked at the high school test and basically determined that if there were about a dozen items added to the math and the English test, those tests could measure what the CSU system cared about. So in California now, students, when they, in 11th grade, when they sit down and take the accountability test, get to the near the end of the test booklet and come to a page that basically says, stop. You're finished with the state's test, but if you're thinking about going to college, particularly CSU, take the rest of the items. Purely voluntary, but take the rest of the items. And students then get a score back, and they're told when they get their results back one of several things. One is, congratulations, you did really well on this augmented test. You're ready to do college-level work, and if you go to a CSU campus, you will be guaranteed placed into a credit-bearing course. You won't have to take the test to figure out if you need remediation or not. You're exempt from that test. That's one result they get back. They might get a result that says, you did pretty well, but you'll need to make sure you take another math course or another set of courses in your senior year in order to be exempt from a placement test and in order to be guaranteed placement into a credit-bearing rather than remedial course. Or they're told, unfortunately, you're not ready to do college-level work yet. That's the bad news. The good news is you have another year of high school ahead of you, and over time, the CSU system is developing a set of tools, online tools, tutoring tools, and the like to help students fill in skill gaps. And they're working with the high schools to create senior year courses that can do the same. So the important part of the test, actually, is for the kids who don't do well, the help that they get afterwards, because they've gotten a clear, accurate signal of whether they are ready to do college-level work or not. In any event, that's the one approach is an end-of-course, an end-of-grade test. A second or end-of-course test, like the Algebra 2 test we talked about, New York State gives Regents exams, which are end-of-course exams, and the selected courses, the City University of New York uses the results on the test, the same thing that CSU uses those results to make a determination about whether students take remedial or credit-bearing courses. Other states are using college admissions tests, the ACT, in most cases in Maine, I think they're using the SAT. And ACT actually has a college-ready benchmark on it, but those tests are not well aligned with the state's individual state standards, so they've got to augment those tests with additional items in order to get a measure of how well students learn the state standards and curriculum. But anyway, you got those three approaches. I think I'm going to skip over some of this in the interest of time. But if you've got questions about those three approaches, we can come back in and take them. The trend in states is moving towards end-of-course exams. As states are trying to figure out what to do, that's where they're heading. That has the advantage of being the tests that are best aligned with curriculum, that provide feedback that can be used to improve instruction rather than just measure the results. States struggle with how many end-of-course tests to put in place. The more tests you add, the higher the cost, so there is that issue. And again, I think one of the reasons states came together around the Common Algebra 2 test was to reduce the cost. What this chart shows is the states that are currently giving end-of-course exams on the top, either in rigorous courses like Algebra 2 or English 11, that can be used as a college-ready measure, or in introductory courses. The bottom ones show you which states are telling us they're planning to do that. And again, you see it's a pretty robust number of states that are moving in this direction compared to either of the other two options that I mentioned. So we can discuss that in more detail.
Mr. Cannon.
I hear Representative Lewin. Excuse me, Mr. Cohen. Representative Lewin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I apologize for interrupting, but if I don't ask now, I'll forget. Your testimony is very interesting. Of the states that are doing that end-of-coursework test, have there been any difficulties with or, I guess, growing pains in developing that so that students' performance on their coursework throughout that course is somewhat comparable to their performance on those tests.
Let me answer that in a couple of ways. First, we have less information than either one of us would like to be able to give a full answer to your question, because a lot of this stuff is relatively new. Secondly, in some cases, these tests were developed, how can I put this, as a check on the school-specific or teacher-specific evaluation of the student's coursework. That is, if everyone had 100% confidence in teachers' evaluation of students' work in the course, we probably wouldn't be talking about any of these tests, period. So you'd expect some distance between the two, given the purpose of the test. Where this gets complicated, but I think importantly and helpfully complicated, is when states require that the course count towards as a portion of the course grade. Mm-hmm. So that you're then basically saying we have two sources, the teacher will have two sources of information upon which to base a grade. One is a consistent measure statewide, and the other is clearly more idiosyncratic measures in the classroom. And states that are moving in that direction, they're always struggling with what's the right balance between the two, but think that that's, for the people we're talking to, they think that's a pretty good blend. But that, that's judgment more than data-driven at the moment.
It's a great question, Representative Moon, and I suspect over the course of the next 2 days we'll be diving a little bit more into trying to get our bearings on what the implications of that particular option use may bear out for us. Well, Mr. Cole.
Yeah, I just have a couple more points I want to make.
You're doing great. You have about 3 or 4 minutes left. So.
Terrific. I'll move even more quickly then. One is, particularly at the high school level, tests are not the only indicators you want to look at as you're thinking about how well are our schools doing to prepare students for college and career. And this came up in a question earlier in the session, but as we've been thinking about it, you basically want to look, first of all, at three things. You want to look at course completion. Did kids take the right curriculum? That's particularly true in states that don't yet require everyone to take a core preparatory curriculum, but make it voluntary in some manner. How many kids in the school are actually taking and completing the curriculum? Secondly, you want to look at some measure of whether students are learning what you really care about, and so that gets you into the testing discussion. And then thirdly, you want to know about their attainment. Did they graduate from high school? Did they earn a college and career-ready diploma, if that's a distinction in the state? And are they moving on to post-secondary education? So you've got course completion, achievement, and attainment issues that you want to look at. And you want to look at each of those in three ways. One is, are kids making progress towards the goal of readiness? So with regard to course completion, for example, the question is, are ninth graders earning credit, enough credit in their ninth grade to stay on track towards 10th grade, etc.? If not, that's the time you want to be intervening, because that's a make or break time in terms of whether kids will ultimately graduate or not. But you don't only want to look at progress along the way, you want to know, did kids actually meet readiness standards, and have they exceeded it? Right? Have they taken AP or IB courses? Have they earned college credits? Have they earned industry-recognized credentials? So we think you want to think in more robust ways than, for example, you do at fifth grade about how well the school is doing. It's not just the test score, and you don't quite have courses to look at in the elementary grade, but you need a more robust picture of the school and student performance in order to really make preparation for college and career the mission of the school. I don't really want to spend time on this. Couple things to finish up. I mentioned earlier that Minnesota is one of the leading states in this area, and along with 7 other states, you are participating in a college and career-ready policy institute that a number of organizations achieve. NGA, the Data Quality Campaign, Jobs for the Future, and Education Council are working together. This is a very intensive technical assistance effort to states to basically work with you to help think your way through, particularly these assessment and accountability issues, as well as providing support to schools and students so that you not only raise the bar, but get students over that. There are two people who lead this work for us who are sitting right there, Susan Votary, who's with the Chiefs, and Elliot Regenstein with Education Council. When I'm gone after today, they'll be coming back to the state, offering any really hard questions, ask them. This is how you can get in touch with them. Finally, I just want to close with I forget who asked the question about the relationship between the graduation tests and these end-of-course tests. So I've stuck some slides in the back here, if I can get to it. So this is an analysis of what graduation tests in, I think, seven states when we completed this work, what they measured. Right. More than half of the items on their math tests are actually measuring pre-algebra skills. Only about 30% were measuring basic algebra, which is about algebra 1, and only 15% of the items went past that. Keep this in mind. Here's a good algebra 2 test that measures college readiness. Only 10% of the items are measuring pre-algebra. Only a fifth are measuring essentially algebra 1 skills, and you need some of those kinds of items on these tests. But 70% are measuring much more rigorous advanced math. So if done well, there's a real difference between a test that measures the floor of performance, right? You know, you're getting over the bar so we can hand you the diploma, versus a test that measures whether you're really ready to do college-level work. With that, I will stop. I've gone through every slide that I have that I thought was worth talking about this morning, and I'm happy to take any more questions that time permits, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. I apologize, but the time really doesn't do justice for the amount of information to be shared and the vetting that needs to happen here. I want to call and represent Dabney who has a question. I also want to acknowledge the presence of Representative Carlson this morning. Welcome to the committee, Representative Carlson. Representative Carlson is chair of our Finance Committee in the House, but in my mind, more importantly, has been sort of our elder statesman in education policy and finance issues over the years, having chaired most of our K-12 policy and finance committees over the years. And Mr. Representative Carlson, I would welcome you to ask any questions at any time.
Thank you
for being here. I'm going to ask Mr. Pakel to come down and get situated while we entertain Representative Dabney's question. And perhaps, Mr. Cohen, you can just stay there. I don't think Kat will object too badly. We may perhaps even have you both answer questions simultaneously. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Call, very taken with Achieve's approach here. I think my question is, does Achieve have insight, recommendations, concerns, discussion about how you backfill down the grades so that the students are ready to take the college and career ready courses? How do we avoid having a top heavy system that says, in high school, we hit you with a 2x4.
So, timing is everything. In one sense, you're on a good start. Whether you've got the timelines at both ends working together or not, I don't have enough, information to really judge that. But the fact that you did so well and show the improvements you showed on fourth grade math and TIM, for example, says what you're putting your students on a trajectory to get to where they need to be. So continue that. You need to keep the focus up in middle school, number one. Number two, you've got a policy that has more kids taking algebra in middle school, which will help prepare them, in math. So those things are important, number one. Number two, you've got a very impressive, again, in math or math and science, a very impressive strategy around professional development and the like to actually equip teachers with the ability to teach to higher standards. In a lot of states, that's entirely left up to, magic, So you've got a real strategy there. I don't know enough to know if it's broad enough or deep enough to get you all the way where you need to go, but that's another component. And the third thing, I know you invest pretty heavily in providing support for students, and that's the third critical area that you need to look at and make sure that that's working well.
We have a question from Representative Katz and Representative Dietrich, and then we'll move on to Dr. Pickell's presentation. Representative Katz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question I have is, have you looked at or examined when courses are being offered and whether that actually leads or contributes to college readiness? You know, I look at a student who would be taking an Algebra 2 class as a sophomore and taking an end of course exam, mm-hmm. and at that stage, yes, they're college ready, but then does that speak well for 2 years down the road? So, you know, looking at kind of comparisons there, has any work been done about when should these courses be offered?
So this is
Mr. Cole.
Couple quick answers to that. One is you need to keep this in mind if you go to end of course exams that kids take those exams when they take the course. And we saw when we gave the test to 90,000 students last spring, kids took Algebra 2 anywhere from the 8th grade to the 12th grade. Most in 10th or 11th grade, though. That's number one. Number two, the students who took it at the earlier grade level, not surprisingly, the more advanced students, like not a lot of 8th graders are taking Algebra 2, but those kids are really strong in math. They did better on the test than the kids who took it in 12th grade. That's not a timing issue. That tells you who's taking the course at what grade level. Thirdly, in mathematics in particular, two things matter. Taking the right courses and taking either math courses or courses that use math all the way through the senior year. College faculty in math will tell you that if the kids didn't take something math-related in their senior year, they forgot a lot of what they learn. So you're right. You could take Algebra 2 in the 10th grade, be ready to take college-level math, at which point the student either ought to continue to take advanced high school-level math or ought to take college-level math, but they shouldn't take no math at that point. That wouldn't serve anybody well.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm not going to ask for a reply today because I think that this is a little more complex than what we have time for, but what I would like to do is get a list of resources or ideas from Achieve because I don't feel like I've seen that quite yet. But anyhow, my question: you asked us at the beginning of this hearing to think of the typical child, the typical student. Well, you know, most of us here, maybe not. Now that I think about it, have kids in high school. We can envision our kids' high school. We envision our kids' friends as they come over, and the typical student is extremely complex, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, we want them all to be proficient and prepared for college or career ready, and that is a goal that we all share. And what we have done here is we've laid out one path. Strong standards, robust testing, and that equals proficiency. But from what I see, and I think that the reason that we haven't achieved this already is that there's more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of structures that need to be around that the proposal that we're embarking on.
Mm-hmm.
And what my question is then, what are some of those structures? What are some of those programs that work in other states? And like I said, I don't know if we need to talk about that today right now, but I am very interested in knowing what some of those other safety nets mm-hmm. are for kids. And are we prepared with those?
Right. I think that is a longer conversation, but let me just say real quickly, what I think you and I would agree on, if I heard you correctly, is that these standards, assessments, et cetera, maybe, at least I would say, they are necessary but not sufficient, right, to get the performance that we need. Secondly, and we can talk about this later, one of the reasons that Jobs for the Future is one of the partners in this effort is because they focus so heavily on figuring out the supports, the interventions, and the curricular pathways that are most important to have for not necessarily typical kids, for the most disadvantaged students. How do we make sure that we get those kids up to rigorous standards and really prepare to succeed afterwards? So there's a lot of work that's going on in this area that Achieve is not leading but has partners on it. Elliot and Susan would be happy to talk to you about that. I mean, it's not on this trip, but on their next trip. But we'll follow up because there is a lot of good stuff there.
Thank you.
That's probably a good transition to Mr. Pickell in terms of helping us understand what's currently in the landscape in regards to both the big picture but also some of the practical considerations that Representative Dietrich raises. And I'm struck by this picture that we're at a stage where we're going to measure in a high-stakes way certain expectations, perhaps with students who are have not experienced the kind of dynamics earlier in their involvement in K-12 that their younger counterparts are now experiencing. And so I almost have this picture of sort of this mismatch kind of thing that's happening. And one of the things that worries me is perhaps repeating that mismatch over time as we then look at alternative long-term options in terms of high school exit exams. Mr. Patel, before I call on you, though, I do want to acknowledge we have our high school pages here, and I'm going to ask them to stand up and just embarrass the heck out of them. That's wonderful. I suspect a number of you, are you all juniors?
Yeah.
Oh, so we're talking about you.
Right. Exactly.
You should be hanging around here all week, and you should be lobbying us. You are, and this committee all week. So, Malcolm, it's good to have you here. Let's show appreciation for our young men. Mr. Patel, we're yours. We have about 25 minutes before we need to adjourn.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it's an honor to be with you again. My name is Kent Patel, and I'm the head of something, a new organization called the College Readiness Consortium at the University of Minnesota. I'm a former K-12 teacher, specifically high school teacher and administrator, and I work in Bloomington and in St. Paul. And at the university, the organization that I now head works really at three levels. At the policy level, President Brunich chairs, and we coordinate the Minnesota P16 partnership, which has been a vehicle for a lot of the work we've done with Achieve. At the school level, we've created something in partnership with the state and our administrators' associations called the Minnesota Principals Academy. And at the student and family level, we're building something called Ramp Up to Readiness. And I'll very briefly touch on each of those in the course of these remarks. But I think what Mike has done is really lay out a vision of the medium and long term. And I think, Mr. Chair, my charge that you gave me is, what do we do now? How do we measure college readiness now? And more importantly, how do we increase it? So I am going to attempt to share a few thoughts with you on that score, in particular about the grad test that all of you are going to be grappling with this week. How does that decision that you need to make on behalf of these students and their peers fit into this larger frame around college readiness? But I do want to underscore the value of the work that Mike just described. I have actually, both that from the district and the university level, been either a participant in or observer of this work with Achieve. And I'll tell you, I've seen it both when we do this standards revision with Achieve and when we don't. In language arts and math, we had the opportunity to work as a state with Achieve on their benchmarks. We're in the guts of doing that in science. I will tell you that the difference between working with a very grounded national organization that has got not just ties to great researchers but other states is a huge asset to figuring out what to do with your own standards. In science, we're doing great work. We have both a P16 working group that's been co-chaired by Janet Dubinsky, who's a professor of neuroscience at the university, and Beth Awney, who's at the Department of Education. And then there is a working group that the Department of Education has had underway. And I think we're going to come up with a really good set of college-ready science standards for you to consider and for hopefully our teachers and schools to implement. But it's a lot easier when you have a partner like Achieve at the table to help you really benchmark and think beyond your own state's borders. And I know science is on Mike's to-do list over time. So I want to echo the value of working with an organization like that in the long term. But what do we do right now? Mr. Chair, you asked me a question about, do our Minnesota standards reflect that common core of college readiness? And I think the answer is we're getting there through this partnership with Achieve and through the work we're doing, but the pace is necessarily glacial. You have to revise the standards, and then you have to revise the tests, and then we have to create curricular frameworks to help teachers teach to the standards, and then we have to do the professional development to help teachers use the frameworks, and then we have to ultimately help students grapple with it. And so that's a long-term process. One of the questions you may get from some of your constituents, I get all the time too, is why can't you just use the MCAs to measure college readiness? Why can't we just use our current tests? Don't we have too many tests? I think it's implicit in Mike's presentation now, but because it's a question I get so often, I'll give you my answer. The answer is we can use the MCAs to measure college readiness at the far extremes. If a kid hits the ball out of the park on the MCAs and is absolutely so far at the top of the performance scale, we can say with pretty good confidence that they're ready for success at the University of Minnesota. That's a small percentage of our students. If a student absolutely is at the bottom of the distribution on the MCAs, we know they're not ready for the University of Minnesota or other institutions of higher education. But the reality is those are not assessments that measure college readiness for the great majority of our students that we're trying to make sure are ready for post-secondary education. Over time, the goal is to get it so that actually our state assessments are increasingly effective measures of college readiness. So what do we do now? For the purpose of measuring college readiness, probably the best measure we have in Minnesota today is the ACT test, which is the test that 70% of Minnesota high school graduates every year take to get in to most colleges and universities. Some who go, in particular out of state, do also take the SAT, but most take the ACT. And the benefit of the ACT is that it also has two tests that align toward it that many Minnesota kids also take called the Plan and the Explore. ACT has basically developed college readiness benchmarks where they've looked at the kids who took their tests, followed them into undergraduate programs, and said, what did the kids who got a B or a C, C or better, in college get on their ACTs in high school? They've developed a benchmark score. And they literally put it at a specific number on the test. They put it at 18 in, or higher in English, 21 or higher in reading, 22 or higher in math, 24 or higher in science. It's a regression analysis where they basically try and factor out all the controls. We've looked at those readiness benchmarks at the University of Minnesota. They didn't really reflect what is readiness for our institution, and broadly stated, they do. It's important to keep in mind that ACT reports them like a pivot point, which is that everybody below it is not ready, buddy, and everybody is above it. That makes it very clean and gives you a percentage like the one I'm going to read to you in a moment, but really it's a slope. You're going to have some kids who are under that point who are actually going to do well in undergraduate programs, and you're going to have some kids somewhat above that point who are going to struggle. But the ACT readiness benchmarks at present are a pretty good measure of college readiness here in Minnesota. There's an important question that I just want to not resolve for you but ask, and it was alluded to in Mike's presentation. Is readiness for a four-year institution the same as readiness for a community and technical college? When I talk about around the state getting all of our students ready for post-secondary education, we know a four-year institution is not the right goal for all of our students. As far as we can see from the national data and our beginning work here in Minnesota, the answer is yes. We have a working group in the P16 partnership, and Cindy Crist from the State Colleges and Universities, who's here as one of the co-chairs, really trying to get under the hood of that question. But I'll give you one anecdotal example of it that I think is kind of interesting. Larry Metecki, who many of you may know, is the president of Century College in White Bear Lake, every year does a reading level assessment on the reading materials used in his technical program. And I was just out there at Century, and they just got the results of the reading level assessment they did on their automotive technical manual, the manual the students in auto tech, credit-bearing courses, used. And it came out at college level reading.
I apologize. I'm going to interrupt. I represent Demmer.
Sure.
I think I had a question. Do you want to wait? Or? Okay, why don't you proceed then? That's all. Is it a flaw?
All right, thank you, sir.
Apologize for the interruption.
But it's an important question. Is readiness for a four-year institution the same as readiness for our other institutions of post-secondary education? Our working answer is yes, but I think we need to make sure that we're continually looking at that question. So let's take that ACT, those ACT readiness benchmarks that are pretty good measures for where we are right now. What are we looking at? We're most ready in English. 78% of all Minnesota students scored college ready or above on ACT in English, 62% in social science. College algebra was 56% scored college ready, and in biology it was 38%. Now, really, truly college ready kids are college ready in all four of those subject areas. In any given year, that's about 30% of our high school graduates in Minnesota. It was 31% in 2007. But here is the critical issue that I know is very important to many members of this committee. When you break that readiness level down, the achievement gap that we've seen in many other areas of our school lives and that Mike referred to is apparent as well. White students, 33%, graduated from high school ready on all four ACT benchmarks. 11% of our American Indian students, 19% of our Asian students, 5% of our African American students or black students,
and 17% of our Hispanic students. We see tremendous disparities there in readiness, and I don't need to tell members of this committee, but I think it is something that it's critical that you exert leadership on in your schools and districts. Those communities are the only communities that are growing in Minnesota. I do presentations around the state, and I did one last week at the School Boards Association. And candidly, most of the Metro School Board members don't necessarily go to that. It's a lot of out-state folks. And I have two graphs that show the demographic future of Minnesota, and you know this well. And I could see it in the eyes of many of those school board members. When you tell them, this is your future, these are your kids, and if we do nothing different, there's very little reason to think that they'll be on the path to college readiness. And so those gaps and that demographic reality needs to be front and center as we think about these things. Many of the members asked questions about course taking, and it is a critical factor in leading us toward college readiness. So before I turn to the sort of what do we do now part of this short presentation, let me touch on course taking. The Council of Chief State School Officers, of which Commissioner Segrin is a member, every couple of years does a survey within states of what courses are your kids taking. They took a look in the most recent data set, which was reported in a report called Measuring Up 2008, which is done by a policy institute, that in 2008, 42% of Minnesotan students in grades 9 and 12, 42% of our high school kids are taking at least one upper-level math class. Upper-level math is defined as geometry, algebra 2, trig, calculus, or another similarly situated. The disconcerting news, Mr. Chair, and I can't frankly explain this, is actually that's slightly down from the early 90s, when the same survey found that 45% of our kids were taking advanced math. In the states that did best on this measure, 64% of the kids were taking advanced mathematics. Unfortunately, the story was the same in science, with 9th to 12th graders taking at least one upper-level science course. In 2008, it was 27% of our kids, whereas in the early 90s, it was 31%. In the top states, that was 46% on that measure. Similarly, in terms of 8th graders taking algebra, we had 25% in Minnesota that were taking algebra in 8th grade, and the top states were at 47% at that point. We do have a serious question of rigor. And all of the stuff that we're doing with your leadership and the administration's leadership is addressing that. We are one of two states that is going to require algebra in middle school and algebra 2 in high school, along with California. And we've talked today about this question of ratcheting up standards and rigor. But here's my main admonition to you as you think about how we move forward. It is critical that we not let accountability get ahead of capacity. If we put the requirements out of a well-intentioned desire to get kids ready for the high school, for post-secondary education and high school workplace, too far ahead of where those students can get and where the schools can help them get, it becomes kind of a charade. But you notice I didn't say put them ahead full stop. It's put them too far ahead. You're driving system improvement here that needs to be ahead of where we are. That's the whole point. If we're not doing that, we're never going to catch Massachusetts, much less Finland. But we can't get too far ahead of capacity. And that brings us to the grad test. We have put in place a very challenging 11th grade math test. I don't know how many of you are feeling confident about that or a little nervous. But it's a quantum leap.
I don't intend to. as Representative Murphy did last year, and I sat next to my good friend Representative Greiling, and it was clear that she left me in the dust as we were filling out our test, and afterwards she felt bad about her results. And so, yeah, I mean, this chair was severely humbled by that process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll say as a taxpayer, so it's good when our public servants are severely humbled occasionally, sir. I would say that there's three reasons. So you're at a moment of truth on the grad test. And one could suggest, as we look at the data, as we look at the achievement gap, that this is the place to draw the line in the sand, to say no more. We are finally going to say we are not going to have low expectations, and we're going to raise. And there's a logic to that argument. Mm-hmm. However, you have to ground it in the size of Minnesota's achievement gaps and the rigor with which we are setting the bar on that assessment. There's a proposal that I know you'll be talking about this week that has various shadings, but basically would allow some alternative ways to grant a diploma in addition to hitting a passing score on the MCAs and the grad, there's three key reasons I would urge you to find a way to do that. Many of you heard me talk about longer-term strategies around, and of course, exams at a previous occasion. But very quickly, there's three key reasons I think you should think about and look for ways to do that. And then I think you're not, if you do so, selling out college readiness for all kids. Number one, it's always good to have multiple measures. One cut score on one test is harnessing a very high-stakes decision to one measurement of readiness. And I think I know certainly even some of the members of this committee have shared with me the challenges their own kids have and others on standardized tests. So it provides multiple measures. And if we're trusting the educators in our classrooms and at our school administrations to actually teach the math, I believe we can trust them to assess the students using some additional measures with clear statewide criteria. So number one, it's just good, it's just good policy. But number two, there is, as one of the members noted earlier, I think actually as the chair did, there's an opportunity to learn questions. This is like turning the battleship. We have, in partnership with Achieve, made positive and dramatic changes in our math standards. And we have a lot of these students who have gone through their K-12 education, not necessarily the beneficiary of the math curricula that are producing these big improvements in our TIMSS tests. So there is just a critical question of actually deciding that we're going to hold these 11th graders accountable for a level of performance in math that, frankly, the state wasn't asking them to master when they were little kids. But third, and finally, I would suggest that there needs to be a balance of priorities here. If we force schools to do any one thing to the exclusion of all others, they're not going to do all others. I was at Arlington High School in St. Paul last week, and I'll just mention it because it's a school I know well and I think highly of. 90% of the kids are on free and reduced price lunch. Over 90% are students of color. 2 years ago, the first year, their proficiency rate on the MCA 11th grade math test was in the single digits. It was a little better last year. If you, we collectively, provided that school with no other mechanism to grant a diploma, they're looking at upwards of 85% of their students not being able to get a diploma. That critical reality is going to take off the table all of the other efforts that that school is putting in place to not focus exclusively on the students who are really below proficiency, but to take those students in the academic middle and ramp them up to readiness. And when I said this to some folks, they've said, well, you're suggesting then that we should not worry about these kids on behalf of these kids? And to be honest, on one level, in the short term, I am. I mean, these are hard decisions. And if you force the schools to focus exclusively on one group of kids that is way below proficiency, they simply, unless you have a lot more money for them, they don't have the capacity to help these other students in the academic middle succeed in advanced placement and international baccalaureate. But that sounds too Machiavellian, like you're just going to focus on some kids versus all kids. So let me conclude with a point that actually tries to connect the dots between those two efforts. Back to our demographics. If we're talking in particular here about the new Minnesota, Minnesotans who are on the wrong side of that achievement gap who we want to help accelerate dramatically academically, within schools, you have an urgent need to have students of color and low-income kids and other kids who have not been in the college prep track getting in there and succeeding. That takes time and resources. A program we brought into St. Paul that has spread all over Minnesota is called AVID, Advancement Via Individual Determination, and it actually pairs a support class with students taking more rigorous courses. That takes time and resources, but what it does when it happens is it changes the whole culture of the school. You begin to see students that you never saw before in the AP classes and in the college prep classes, not only taking them, but succeeding. That has a positive effect on the students that we're worried about here who are not likely to pass the grad. So if state policy puts in place a graduation requirement that is, frankly, such a high bar that schools have to throw everything they've got in terms of their resources and staffing at a basic push for proficiency, the other unintended consequence, I believe, of that action is that schools are not going to have the time and resources to focus on that critical effort to move students in what I call the academic middle onto that college readiness track. And that if we take a long-term and nuanced approach, it's going to give schools the flexibility to do both. So it's critical that we raise the floor and that we eliminate the academic low rows, which is what the grad is about, but it's equally critical that we actually help students who are in that middle move up. And so I would urge you to see this this very complex set of policies that you're thinking your way through. In the big picture, the lens is readiness for post-secondary education, broadly defined, and you do face a big decision with the grad, but you also face, I think, some opportunities to continue this longer-term work with in partnership with Achieve, and that Commissioner Segrin and others have been leading for a number of years. So that actually we really do begin to see the kind of improvements we saw in the TIMS results for especially our younger kids in math translating into big gains as they move up into high school. Mr. Chair, I'm not going to now talk about the solution side that we're working on, the two pieces of propaganda that I shared with you, the Principals Academy and Ramp Up to Readiness, but such that people would be interested in doing so, I'd be glad to do it. I think probably as an ending point, I'll just say, and many of you have heard this line, that we've mostly been talking here this morning about weighing the cow, but, you know, weighing the cow doesn't fatten it. And so that what really, as Mike alluded to, it comes down to is curriculum and professional development and intensive support, and that's the kind of thing we're trying to do through the Principals Academy and through Ramp Up, and that I know the state is trying to do through Math Science Academies, and that many schools and districts are doing as well. So that's not the primary focus here today, but it's always important to understand that we've got to help them build the capacity to help students meet these requirements as we're putting them in place.
Thank you, Mr. Pacal. And as long as we're throwing metaphors around for Mr. Cohen's benefit, as most Minnesotans appreciate, we spent a good chunk of the year learning well on how to drive on ice. And it seems to me that to some degree, perhaps a week, but nonetheless, I think a nice metaphor to share with Mr. Cohen about, you know, driving on ice is about, you know, being able to keep going forward without sliding off to the side. There is a way to do it. There's an art to it,
mm-hmm.
But it's a difficult art. And more often than not, most of us learn the hard way, like the 360 I once did on I-94 in the middle of rush hour traffic. Fortunately, for some miraculous reason, I was okay. But we do have a question from Representative Demmer, and then we've got about 4 minutes left, members.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, all kinds of thoughts. First of all, thank you. You know, we've been really grappling here the years that I've been here about assessments and testing and, you know, all of that sort of thing. And I think as I've thought through, you know, testing is really, from my perspective, really, testing is really about assessing what you've learned, but it's also assessing your ability to prepare for something, and quite frankly, a lot of the learning, at least in my college education, and a lot of my learning happened while I was trying to study for the test and try to figure out if I could put it all together. And then when you take the test or whatever the assessment, that gives you a chance to show that. But having said that, I think there's a lot of emphasis now being put on not just the end result of the test, but the process of getting there and what you do along the way. In fact, there's some colleges, and Mr. Chair and others, that are not only are they not emphasizing the ACTs, not even requiring the ACTs any longer as a prerequisite for considering admission. And I'd like to know your thoughts about that direction. I know there's some, just recently this is happening, where there's some pretty significant good colleges, four-year institutions, that are saying you don't even have to take it if you don't want to. If you want to, we'll take the test. We'll use that in our battery of information that we use to try to decide on your admission. But what are you seeing about that? What are your thoughts, either one of you, as we look at assessment, the purposes for assessment, and its uses along the way? What are your thoughts about that?
And if you could answer that within the context of still, nonetheless, at the state level, at our level, regardless of what higher ed may want in those experiments, we're desiring, you know, a quality outcome out of our system. Mr. Cohen.
Yeah, a couple quick answers to that. One is to reiterate what you said, Mr. Chair. Regardless of what the colleges want, I think you need a measure of whether you're getting the results that you want from the system, and that's going to involve assessment of some kind, and I think that's important in and of its own right. With regard to admissions tests, you know, there's a lot of debate about whether those tests add information, particularly to the most selective institutions, compared to what your GPA in course picking provides, for example. But at least when I was talking about a different use of those tests, not whether you're admitted to college, right, but whether once you get in, you're ready to take credit-bearing rather than remedial courses. So think about, when we talk about college readiness, it's really about placement into credit-bearing courses. And I think regardless of who uses the ACT or the SAT for admissions, post-secondary institutions will continue to have some way of deciding what kind of what course you take your first year and whether it's remedial or not. And my argument essentially was it would be good if you can figure out a way to get that kind of information to kids while they're still in high school. So if they need remediation, if you will, they can do it in their senior year rather than their freshman year. It'd be cheaper for everybody and more effective.
Mr. Patel.
Representative, Mr. Chair, well over 30,000 students will apply to the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus this year. For the foreseeable future, we will need a test to decide about their readiness for admission. So most of those schools that you're referring to, and it is a very interesting development, I agree with you, are smaller schools that have fewer applicants and maybe more capacity to do what gets called a holistic review in the admissions world. So for the foreseeable future, institutions like the U will need a test, and it's an important question of which test.
Members, we are out of time. It feels like we always just warm up to the conversation when we need to adjourn. I want to remind members that we will continue this conversation and begin to hone in a little bit more specifically on the grad test in Minnesota as it currently is. As we continue through the week, continue to vet out some other long-term options. We got into some of that today. We got some good advice in terms of how to think about that in broad ways. And as I mentioned, there most likely will be bills coming forward, in which case in the next couple of weeks we will be revisiting this issue. So we're going to be spending quite a bit of time over the course of the next couple of weeks exploring this issue in depth. Guided, I hope, by a deep sense of just being very deliberate, being driven by data, and approaching it in terms of this fine balance of doing no harm, but nonetheless continuing to push the envelope of quality outcomes that from our K-12 systems that match what we hear increasingly we need to match up with in terms of reality. In our constantly evolving economy and social needs. So I want to thank you, Mr. Pickell. I want to thank you, Mr. or Dr. or Mike. It's good to have you here. We appreciate the presence of your staff. We look forward to continuing interacting with them as well. And with that, Representative Bordes.
Mr. Chair, while we have just 10 seconds here, I wanted to just embarrass my granddaughter. She's part of the
That's
FACE
fun.
Program today.
Where is she?
Her name
I see good looks runs in the family.
Her name is Megan. Yes. And the reason I pointed out, she was also part of the high school band that was at the inaugural parade.
Wonderful.
So she's had two exciting weeks.
I did catch them on television, and the commentators made a big deal about this is probably the one group that is not the least bothered by the cold weather.
Now, the frostbite has disappeared now.
Yeah.
Now they just have the pictures to remember it by. So I just wanted to point her out.
Thank you. Members, thank you for the good conversation today. Until tomorrow, this committee stands adjourned.